Greetings, I'm Bill Plotkin, and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Samuel Jordan, who is president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. And Mr. Jordan is here today to talk to us about the various ways that his organization is working with all of us to make transit fairer and better in the Baltimore area. So, Samuel, if I can call you that, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Bill, and glad to be joining you and your audience.
Well, it's great to have you. First of all, for those of our listeners who are unfamiliar, could you tell us a little bit about the coalition?
The Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition, Bill, was formed within hours of Governor Larry Hogan's cancellation of the Red Line Light Rail Project, June 25th, 2015. I think it's stamped on my forehead.
Mm-hmm.
Because since that time, since within hours of that cancellation, we've worked tirelessly. That's 7 years, maybe about 5 years alone, advocating for the completion of the Red Line because we consider that a colossal error in meeting the needs of Baltimore, the Baltimore region, with respect to issues like transit equity, reliable transit systems, equitable transit systems, but also the Red Line would bring $3 to $6.5 billion in what's called transit-oriented development. I want to make sure that's clear to the audience why we do this. Over the last 7 decades, There's been no more robust a generator of economic development in this country like light rail. There's no competition. In fact, if anyone in the audience wants to know the difference, the major difference between Washington, D.C. and Baltimore since 1976 is the D.C. Metro Rail system. It's reliable. It's principally equitable. There's always a struggle on equity issues. But it has brought a prosperity to Washington, D.C. that actually should be part of Baltimore's economic profile.
Yeah, it's a shame because the Washington system has been expanded so that it actually covers a lot of the metropolitan area for them.
You know, Bill, in this last census, Baltimore lost 5.7% of its population.
Yeah.
Washington, D.C. gained 110,000 people.
Yeah, that says something, doesn't it?
It says a lot. And what it says is that maintaining a merger of transit policy, equitable transit policy, and land use or economic development is the best way to capture the economic strength of fixed rail. In fact, the mantra in the industry is development follows rail. Buses follow development. I just want to mention this when you ask about our history.
Right.
Our mission and vision. Our mission is to build and lead an informed, resolute regional constituency that will demand and pursue the completion of the Red Line Light Rail Project because, and this is our vision, we see Baltimore and the Baltimore region among the leading cities of the nation when it offers an equitable, reliable, multimodal transportation network for the Baltimore region anchored by light rail.
Yeah. Could you tell us, Samuel, how can someone find out more information about the coalition?
You know, we have a website. You can find us at our website, of course, and on Facebook, Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. And you can reach us also on our website. That's moretransitequity.com. Mm-hmm. And we're in the process now, frankly, Bill, of another sensitive matter. That is, we are conducting what's called a ballot access petition campaign to put a question on the ballot in the November 8th election, these are the midterms, that will put a question to the voters. Should we compel the city to take the first steps in creating a Baltimore Regional Transportation Authority to supplant the MDOT-MTA model that governs us now, but without any participation of the jurisdictions, Baltimore City and the four counties nearby. Yeah. I want to make this point because it's also very key to the way we look at the work. I'm not sure if your audience has seen this or how many members of your audience know the truth of this matter, but very few people who are aware of Hogan's cancellation of the Red Line were not aware that there were more than just racial overtones. In fact, what we call it is structural racism. The most adverse impact, that's disproportionately adverse impact of the cancellation, was on communities of color, poor households, low-income households, and people who are transit-dependent.
The cancellation
of the Red Line eliminated a great opportunity for Baltimore to finally experience an improvement in transit equity. That is, access. In Baltimore, there's no equal access to transit across the region.
Right.
In fact, two out of three jobs, Bill, in the region cannot be reached within 90 minutes by public transportation. Two out of three cannot be reached. Oh, another way to put it, if you drive a car, you can get to 100% of the jobs in this region in an hour. But if you don't drive a car and use public transportation, you can only reach 9% of the jobs in this region in an hour.
That's drastic. Once you get out of certain modes they have, you're out of luck.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you see, what that means is that two out of three jobs can't be reached within 90 minutes by public transportation. We call that transit detention. That means for 3 to 4 hours every day, you're captive to a dysfunctional transportation system, and you're not getting paid for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But nevertheless, you have to use your time to do this. And what it means also is, with the unreliability of the transit system, that is, the buses don't come on time, that means people who are dependent upon public transportation in Baltimore, and this is the base of the economy, remember, essential workers depend upon public transportation.
Right.
That's the pandemic taught us that that's the fundamental element of the economy. And when they can't get to work on time, the entire economy suffers. So another way we put it is, until Baltimore addresses what we see as structural racism in transit policy, Baltimore will not have a modern transportation system. So as much as we talk about Washington, D.C. and the development that the D.C. metro system has brought to Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia and suburban Maryland and the D.C. suburbs, that won't happen in Baltimore until we address this question.
Yeah.
And we want people to join us and to understand it. So we don't want to just preach and just simply shout it, but the best way to address structural racism when you find it is to make structural change. So we're seeking to replace the MDOT-MTA, that's the Maryland Department of Transportation, Maryland Transit Administration, that model that governs us, because it doesn't let us breathe. It doesn't let us, we have no autonomy, and we have no participation in funding flexibility.
And no input. It's outrageous that we have a system in this area that is out of the hands of the local folks and the local government. Let's talk about what needs to be done. You've mentioned that your campaign is going on regarding ballot access.
Yes.
Let's talk about, for example, in the Maryland session, what needs to be done?
Well, you know, this good question, Bill, because this session, as you know, before it began or upon its commencement, Speaker Jones and President Bill Ferguson in the House and the Senate, respectively, they announced that this would be the equity session. And we want to hold them to their promise. There were a number of bills passed, particularly with respect to climate and environment and so on, but we also had a bill. In fact, this would be the second session for that bill, and the last session was called the Transportation Analyses and Assurances Act, but this year it's called the Transportation Equity Act of 2022. And what it would do is so simple, Bill, I just wanted to make sure this is clear. It's hard to believe, but Title VI of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which governs equal access to transit, for example,
right,
is not uniformly enforced by the federal government in the nation. And it is not enforced at the state level. And the guarantees or protections of Title VI are pretty straightforward. No one can be discriminated against on the basis of their color, race, national origin, income, and so on. You've heard it. By the transit system where that gets $1 federal support. But you see, at the state level, there is no such guarantee. It might catch you by surprise. But right, the protected classes under Title VI are not protected in Maryland. So our bill, HB 141 and SB 23, would require what's called prior transit equity analyses before major policies or changes are made in transportation policy. That is, the burdens, the benefits have to be weighed and balanced out to see if there are any inequities in their distribution.
Right.
And that's to be done before that policy change can be made.
And I assume that regarding the gubernatorial campaign, that commitment to that act should be something that every candidate should be quizzed on.
In addition to that, you're absolutely right. In addition, they not only should be quizzed, but keep this in mind. We had both houses, that is the House of Delegates, pass that bill, HB 141, SB 23, by a veto-proof majority. The Senate also passed the bill, our bill, Transit Equity Act of 2022, with a veto-proof majority. But the governor has yet and has not signed it into law. And he may or may not do so. Today is this bill signing day. We have two more on the 16th of May and on the 26th of May. So we have a slim chance, not a great chance any longer, but a slim chance. And we want the candidates who are running for office, especially the gubernatorial candidates, to understand that without guarantees of equity in everything pertaining to transportation, and without commitment to the completion of the Red Line Light Rail project, we might just be losers again. Because as you can imagine, and I want your audience to sort of think about this, almost like a quiz. What would they say constitutes Larry Hogan's signature economic development project that he either supported or initiated in the last 7 years?
Yeah,
you'd be hard to answer that question because
right,
there was none.
Right.
Killing the Red Line not only was a colossal error, but it was also the biggest economic decision that he made.
Yeah.
And it crippled the economy.
Yeah. Samuel, we're running out of time. I wanted to ask you, though.
I'm enjoying our conversation, Bill.
Yes, I know. It's unfortunate that it's short. I wanted to ask you, though, what can our listeners do to help?
Sure. A couple things. One, I mentioned our website. They can go to our website. That's moretransitequity.com or Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition. That's our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a page called, you'll see it, called Take Action. And on that Take Action page, you can click, for example, Take the Pledge. And that leads people to our petition that we are circulating now. We need 10,000 ballot petitions by August 1st to get on the ballot in November and put this question to the voter. Can we take the steps we need now in order to guarantee the kind of rail system transit system, and economic development prospects that are brought by light rail, that's $3 to $6.5 billion. Can we do that? Can we compel the city to take the first steps to make that happen? People can help us do that. They can sign the petition. They can take a few petitions and circulate them, but it's simply, you know, your family, friends, and neighbors.
Unfortunately, though, Samuel, that's all we have time for today. Unfortunately, we're living in Baltimore. That's all we have time for today. I want to thank our guest, Samuel Jordan, who is president of the Baltimore Transit Equity Coalition, for being our guest today. Thank you, Samuel. Keep up your good work for all of us. I wanted to thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.